Okay, so we were in the middle of talking about minhag. So I think that what we left off on was minhag oker halacha, right? We'd run through it, so let me just go back over that. So if you remember, right, the Yerushalmi has this notion of minhag oker halacha. The Rajba claims that minhag oker halacha is only by dinei mamonos, presumably because dinei mamonos halacha isn't really halacha in the same way, right? It's like norms, right? We know that. It's like a starting point. Like hilchos shomrim. Right, it's very clear. You learn Hilchos Shomrim, and you know that the Arba Shomrim are just like your starting points. But if you make a deal with somebody, right? If I say Zev, can you watch my phone? And you know, I'll pay you $5, and I still won't hold you responsible for any damages that might happen, right? So, you know, he's a Shomer Sachar with no Achrayos. I can do that, right? There's no reason I can't do that. And then the Mamonos, we understand that intuitively, we're sort of in control of Mamonos, right? Whatever deal we make is, it's a deal, too. So the Rajba, number two, claims that that's really when we talk about minag oker halacha, or minag mevatel halacha. And I mentioned that the problem really is, and number three, is that the Rishalmi says it a second time in Hilchos Chalitza, in Yivamos, where minag oker halacha does not mean dinei mamonos. It's Yivamos, it's Ishus. Now, what does it mean? So just, again, this has copied and pasted the minag, the Tokfam Shal Minag article that I gave you last week. The question of what minag oker halacha really means is a bit unclear, right? And just to recap what we saw, right, for many people it just means, it doesn't really mean minag oker halacha, right? Minag can't really be oker halacha. What it means is that if there is a minag, haraya, that is the halacha, right? And that's why you find limitations that I think I mentioned last week. The Maharik, Marie Cologne, says that it's only true in what he calls a minag vatikin, right? A minag amusad al vatikin, right? Like a minag that we know goes back to Gedolim. Because then we can explain it away. We can say, look, we may not know why this minag is not really against the halacha, but we're relying on the authority of the people who we know were miyase the minag. It doesn't really mean minag oker halacha. It means, like, from our perception, minag is oker halacha, but it probably really is a legitimate halachic opinion. Right? This is in a famous series of Tshuva by Marie Cologne about why it is mutter to dance on Simchas Torah. Right? That's really Tshuva Tes. Tshuva Ches is not that, but in these two Tshuva are about it. Minag Tshuva Tes is really about that, because right, dancing on Simchas Torah is a very shver matzav. Right? Because that's to dance on Shabbos and Yantif, right? And yet the Minag Yisrael was to dance on Simchas Torah since the time of the Gonim. So the Maharik says, well, it's from the time of the Gonim. So it's a Minag, right? Hamiyusad, I'll be Vatikin. It's a Minag Vatikin. It's a Minag that we know was established by the Gonim, so we have reason to believe that there was a halachic justification for it.
Where alone is this from?
It's from Italy.
What period is it by Dostoevsky?
What? No, he's 15th century. He's 15th century.
Okay.
Yeah. If you at some point Jeffrey Wolfe is coming to give a share. He did his PhD on the Maharik. Like that's his expertise is the Maharik. And the Balei Tosfot.
Maharik is a Marie Cologne.
Yeah, it's a Marie Cologne. Right. The Maharik, when you see it in Shulchan Aruch quoted left, right, and center, right, that's the Marie Cologne. Right. The Maharik is just Marie Cologne is
right. Yeah,
there you go. Yes, that's what he did his PhD on. I don't know if you have. Did he give a share here last year? I thought he did, right? No? He's a professor at Bar-Ilan. He teaches at Amudim.
Oh, really?
Who?
Jeffrey Wolf. No?
I remember.
Anyways, he's going to give a share this year at some point. We're just trying to work out the date. But he's great. He's a Talmud of the Rav and a big academic.
Cool.
He's good. Yeah. So that's like how the Marik takes it. If you remember though, Rav Haigon really thinks that it means that. Like minag oker halacha means minag oker halacha because minag is ikar, right? Like minag is just
We say minag is the only reason we keep the halacha, right?
What?
So minag is the only reason we keep the other halachos.
Correct. So if you skip, I think what we're really up to is number six here. So this is an article by Rav Chaim Navon, who also someone who has said he would like to come speak here this year, and we'll see if we manage to actually work with his schedule. Do you know Rav Chaim? Rav Chaim Navon is a rabbi in Modien. He's one of, like, maybe Right, he was Mivatike Tamidei Lichtenstein. He was like the person who wrote like 6 out of 8 of Ravaran's Svarim. Because Ravaran's like Shurim are not written by Ravaran, they were collected, and so he was like the editor on a lot of them. He's a very clear thinker in general, like a clear writer, a clear thinker. He's a good guy to like read. So we've been trying. Every time I do it, it's like a simcha, it was this, that. There was always something. He's a busy guy. Hopefully he'll come, but I don't know how well, I don't know how good his English is. I'm pretty sure he has like an Anglo parent, so his English is not bad. But his Hebrew is also very clear. Is your guys' Hebrew at all passable?
No,
mine's passable.
Good. We have passable, no, and no. Great.
I didn't say no.
He means no.
Fine, passable, no, and eh.
I'm a little under Monty.
What? It's a lot under me.
I'm not a lot under
you. It's like 30 miles under me.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Out of a 32-mile... That's not true. We're talking in modern Hebrew. Mati, ask me some words.
Mati, I have no idea what it means to judge language skills on a mileage scale. Right? And specifically, a 32-mile mileage scale. I don't know what you're...
little.
I don't know if you're like lining up the words you know in, you know, font 12 in a direct vertical line up to...
2,000 miles, like 10 more words.
Well...
So 2,000 miles is like 10 words, so it's very little in the scale.
That would not be in font 12. I don't know what you're talking about. Fine, but so Rav Navon in number 6 writes as follows. He says, "Amnam." Right, really, right? You're not talking in most of these cases in a direct clash between halacha and minhag. Kevan shalacha klasit shvedenu holemet dafka et minhag ha'am. Right, because, and this is really the way to push back, right? I mean, we've seen Maharik says it doesn't really mean it. It means minag vatikin. We assume it is halacha. Rav Haigon says it really means it, but most people point out it doesn't really mean it at all. I mean, what's the context in the Yerushalmi? The Yerushalmi says this is the minag, and this is the halacha, and were Eliyahu to come and say the halacha was different, we would say shh, because minag okra halacha, but. It seems very rhetorical, because what's the context? The context is where the Gemara is telling you the minag is in line with the halacha. They're just saying that were Elio to come and say the halacha is wrong, we wouldn't believe him.
What does it mean the halacha is wrong?
Yeah, this is actually the point, right? Meaning, the Gemara, that's his point, is that the Gemara really, it sounds very rhetorical,
what
right?
Do you create the halacha?
Is it like a lo bashamayim kind of Gemara?
Well, yeah, so it might be something like that, like a lo bashamayim or something like that. Meaning, when it says minag okra halacha, it's saying... Assuming Eliyahu is the ultimate authority on halacha, right? Which again, you know, he may not actually be, right? It's a suspension of disbelief moment, right? It's like, were it true that Eliyahu is the final arbiter of halacha, we wouldn't listen to him on this because it goes against the minhag. But the Gemara isn't saying, and therefore we go against the halacha. We're saying the halacha and the minhag are in line with each other, and were someone to tell us that the halacha wasn't like it's currently being practiced, we wouldn't believe them because the halacha is being reinforced by the minhag.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused on that. If the halacha was not in line with the minhag, and then Eliyahu came and said that the halacha is wrong, we would switch it?
Well, that's clear. It's not clear, right? The Gemara is not... It sounds like a rhetorical expression by the Gemara to express its conviction that the minhag is really, really right.
I mean, tehus are supposed to be...
Please tell me you don't think tehu stands for Tishbi Tarets Kushit Vilbaya.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
I thought that's the...
No, tehu is Aramaic for the question shall stand.
I know, but I thought it should stand until...
No, it's just teku. It stands. It stands unresolved. Just look at our scroll when they translate it. They say, it shall stand unresolved.
I know what
it means tekum. It means let the question stand, because we don't have an answer.
No, but I thought...
No.
Where does that
come from? This is an Achronish thing. They make it up. That Tishbi Taretz Kushit Vilbayot. And then the Achronim have these long dionim. Why is it Tishbi? Im Kvar, we're waiting until Tchias HaMesim. We might as well wait for Moshe Rabbeinu. It should be Meku. And then they get all types of kashas. And like, no, it's Ein Lecha Shofet El should be Omecha. And Moshe Rabbeinu would have to be Mechai Mesim. And he would really be from a previous door that we brought back. But Eliyahu never died. So Eliyahu is from our door. He's constantly from every door. Like, all types of cheshbonos in, like, this non-existent Rosh Tevot. It's amazing. It's not a thing. It's not real.
It sure is made up by the Purim. I'm not saying that Teiku means that. I'm saying that the question stands until Eliyahu comes.
No, they borrow it from Atra Yavol Eliyahu's.
Right.
But it's not what Teiku means, right? The Acharonim, I think it first appears in the Acharonim, say that Teiku means that.
Right, no, all I mean is like when Mashiach comes, Lachari, these questions are going to be answered.
Why do you think that? That there's no evidence of that in the Gemara. The Gemara just says, Teiku, let the question stand. We don't have an answer.
As soon as we have Sanhedrin again, we'll be able to.
Or we'll try.
Right.
Or we'll have to come to some decision, right?
But the higher the minhag, I mean, we're nighting a certain way with tegus.
Usually the chumrah, right?
Machmir.
So the higher that would be the lacha.
No, it's we don't know the answer, so we're machmir, or that's not always, or whatever.
See, we're not nighting, but that's a lacha, just nighting to be machmir.
Yeah, that's not, that's doesn't prove anything,
right?
So this is really the other way out of it. It's just to say, like, look, that's not what minhag v'kra halacha means in the context. It's a rhetorical device, right? He says, the problem is what? The problem is the context doesn't... To put it differently, Rav Lachman seems to make this point about Kavod HaBriyot. Right? The Gemara says, Gadol Kavod HaBriyot, Shadocha Lo Sase Shebetorah. Right? And then Chazal say, oh, how could it be that Kavod HaBriyot is Docha Alav in the Torah? So what did Chazal say? It's Gemara in Brachot Yotet. Lo Tasur! When it says Lo Sase, it means specifically the Lo Sase of Lo Tasur, meaning it only is Docha Derabanans. So Rav Lachman says, you could just walk away from that Gemara and say, oh, Kavod HaBriyot isn't so important, it's only Docha Lo Sase Derabanan. Right? But he said, if that was the case, then shouldn't the Gemara have just said, Gadol Kavod HaBriyot Shedocha Lav and Rabbanan. He said, it's clear that even if that's what the statement of Chazal mean, rhetoric means something too. Right? You don't come up with a formulation like that if it isn't meant to sound strong. Right? And therefore, there are implications, even potentially in Daraisas. Right? Even if this local application is not. So, Rav Chaim Navon points out the same thing, that the Yerushalmi, it doesn't need for minag okar halacha to mean literally minag okar halacha, but the fact is, despite the fact that it didn't need it, it uses the rhetoric that sets a precedent that minag okar halacha. Right, that's really the tension in the Yerushalmi. Right, as we said, tfisa chaseret pesher fiyagur shi'zagim b'tchilas shur. Right, which at first glance seems like it's not understandable. V'achin kachav v'inu b'nei Yerushalmi ma'aseh emdat Yerushalmi, and he said this is really what many of the Gaonim really did think in Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't just Rav Hai. Right? Meaning, he says, it's true that Yerushalmi doesn't demand it. And you could get out of it and say, Minhag Okar Halacha doesn't really mean it. But the fact that the Yerushalmi uses that rhetoric is what leads to a position like Rav Hai Gaon. And he lists for you a few other people who say this. Rav Yehudai Gaon says the same thing. V'av hu, Rav Yehudai Gaon, calls of Eretz Yisrael, b'shir siracha, b'shvil kol ha-mitzvah shenohagim ben shloka halacha, ela k'minag shmad v'lo kiblu mimenu v'sholchlo minag v'vatel lahalacha. Right? They wrote him a letter of all the things that the halacha didn't fit the minag that they had, and he said sha. Right? Minag v'vatel halacha. Right? So he employed it even in cases where there seemed to actually be a tension between the halacha and the minag. L'fi tfisa ma'adifat ha-minhag al-pnei halacha muvan sh'minhag eno mitzumtam davka l'tchum el-chati. L'fi tfisa zol nuftali mikra ha-dvarim ha-mofiim b'mesechet sofrim ein halacha nikbad ad sh'dei minhag. He says, right, therefore, you find this surprising line, which you should no longer be surprised by, that in Mesechet Sofrim, it says, halacha is not nikba until there is a minhag. Right, that's very Rhaigon-esque. Right? Yeah, essentially, right? Meaning, halacha isn't really set in stone until you're knowing it, right? That nohag, minhag, is what gives halacha its force, right? I know this bothers you, but this is like, what?
It sounds more wild than it is, but it's kind of...
I mean...
Bothers me.
Yeah. I don't know if it sounds more wild than it is. Yeah. It's a strong statement.
Like back then, when they make halacha, I mean, people...
Only their bond. That's the structure of their bond.
I mean, look, it's quite impressive. And it's quite impressive. It's very impressive. Yes, it does. It may be a stronger formulation of Ein Gozer Gzeira L'Tzibur Elo K'Imro V'Tzibur Yechol Lamud Ba, right? That you can't have a Gzeira unless the Tzibur keeps it in a Chanami. Okay. He says, L'fi Divrei Mesechet Sofrim, Lo Halach Yishenoten Tokev L'Minag, L'Minag Ushenoten Tokev L'Halacha. Eicha Shal Atzim Chena Rayonita Adivato Shel HaMinag Al Pnei Halacha. He said, how do you justify something like this? Right? How do you justify something this wild? So he says, "Hatzakat is meich al kach sheish b'masoret maasit ish mi beish hamitacheset davka maaseh befoal." So what you're going to have to say is that minug implies a active tradition, or what we call in English really a mimetic tradition, meaning a tradition of action, right, of mimicking action. V'lo la'alacha teoretit, k'de ver haigon. Right, meaning, and really, what is halacha? What's the mesorah of halacha according to these gaonim? The mimetic tradition, right? The tradition of how halacha was practiced, not of how it was thought of, right? Which, in a chanami, is quite a striking statement. Right, maybe you'll say that the samchut of psak, right, the authority of psak, is invested in some sense into klal Yisrael. Ulai beglal sheyesh lo into atzia. Bria, maybe it has a spiritual, a healthy spiritual intuition. Chush rushani mifutach, right? I'm teaching you all types of nice modern Hebrew here, right? Chush ruchani mifutach, right? A developed spiritual sense, right? Okay, chush is a sense, yes, like chush yumar, right? Chush yumar. What's a chush yumar?
A sense of what he's saying.
Sense of humor. Chush yumar. Come on. Chush yumar. Right? Yumar. Right? You'll hear people talk about it. What?
That's what
they're saying. Yes. Chush yumar. Yes, of course. That's what they'll say.
Of course.
Yes. Right? A chush is just a sense, right?
There's no word for humor in Hebrew.
Humar.
Disgusting.
If Ryan
would kill someone.
Good for him. He said, or some ruach ha-kodesh, shall hilal b'sechem psachim, as we've already seen. Remember, I said that some level of minog may indicate a certain level of nevuah, right? Based on right, emena neviim heim beni neviim heim. So the Yad Eliyahu takes this position. He says, "Hare mevuar lanu the mashem minog muskame to kol Yisrael will be ruach hakodesh." Right? That
who's the Yad
Eliyahu? There's some achron. I forget. It's Eliyahu. What?
He's.
I think he's Hungarian. Or Galitzianer.
He came back. That's where I take it.
The Yad Eliyahu. Not the Shechuna b'Mizrach Tel Aviv. I don't think it's that one. It's not that one. No. Okay, I keep getting the. Unfortunately, I keep getting the Shechuna b'Mizrach Tel Aviv. So I'll have to look up later.
What's that?
Called Yad Eliyahu. There's a Shechuna b'Mizrach Tel Aviv called Yad Eliyahu. Okay, fine. Shehashem Yitbarach Hofia Beinahem Mamash Ka'alpi Navi Hinhigo Ki Al Yidei HaRatzon V'Maaseh L'Shem Shemayim Meir Hashem Yitbarach B'chlal Knesset Yisrael Ruach HaKodesh Eichlen Hog. Right, you can't really take that two ways. Someone emailed me and said he didn't really like how strongly I formulated the Rav on it. Okay, assuming you were listening. He listens to a lot of my shirim. Hi, Mike. His comments are always excellent. You should know that. Thank you for your comments. Even if the Rav doesn't, even the Rav isn't that strong, the Eliyahu, like, there's no two ways about it, right? Like, the Eliyahu. Okay.
Is the name
Hillel?
Or is that.
Where are you?
He says Hillel Balsay from Yad Eliyahu.
Where'd you
do this? No. Perash be'ikvot Hillel. Right, it's that his hints comment on Hillel's line in the Gemara in Psachim. No. His name is not Hillel. His name is Eliyahu something. I assume. Right, and therefore, if I don't know the halacha, let him do it, and they'll get it right. What? No, that's the Gemara. Hillel. Hillel, like the Tana Hillel. You know, there's certain lines that if an Achron said it, you'd be like, that's weird. And if the Tana says it, you're like, I guess I have to accept it at some level. I got to understand it. So Hillel said it, you know. What?
Yeah, it's much worse than if some random Achron, I don't know, said it.
Yeah, I know you want it to be not Hillel, but it is Hillel.
It's like Light's wife turned into Hillel. Just kind of plug that into a Medrash somewhere.
You wish. I mean, you could just get out of it right up. No.
Isn't it actually?
How was it?
What do you mean? The way many of the Parshanei Pshat do.
Who? What?
Didn't you read the Eben Ezra?
It's ambiguous. It's ambiguous, man.
How?
Because it could mean the city was in Tziv Melach. She turned around and she, remember, city is feminine. It could be the city was in Tziv Melach.
Who says this?
What? Some of the Prussian have shot.
But where is she in the rest of the story?
She's gone. I don't know. She, whatever.
She doesn't.
So why do the daughters have
the... I don't know. I'm just saying. Some of the Prussian have shot don't like it. They get it.
Mind the mother was too old.
Then did you see that?
She just sat there and watched and was thrilled. I don't know.
Like,
no, I don't know.
She went back to go excavate them from the salt.
This is pretty weird. The part where afterward they say to turn around and violate the
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm pretty sure somebody says that. I don't think I made that up.
Seen her daughter.
That's pretty good. You did, though. You did. You write that down.
Yeah, exactly, right? Wonderful. It's really like the whole... And I'm sure like the whole Moshe says something like that or something. Who knows? Okay. Fine. Last sources on this page. Okay, 9 we already saw, which is the fact that Rambam, at least in the case of Minhag Yisrael, thinks that Minhag is derived from Lotasur. Right? We've seen that before, which is sort of weird because the Netziv, whose Bekias was... incredible.
What?
Man. I know, it was like, it's like there's no word for his Bekias. Bekias was incredible. He writes that the Rambam doesn't believe that Minhag is under Lotasur, and he never says that it is. And I'm like, he does. It's in the Hakdama.
Rambam is going against Minhag's Lotasur?
Yes.
And it's just that he doesn't do this.
I mean, you can read it. Look at number 9.
Right?
He says... V'chein
yitba'er mehem hamin
hagot v'ataganot shetkino shenahag v'chol davador k'mo sh'ra'u beit din shel oto ador v'yishasur asur mehem sh'nemar lo tashman davar sh'yidach yamin
usmal. Oh, that's where the Minhag Yisanedrin.
No, that's what I said. I said Minhag Yisrael, Minhag Yisanedrin, not like Stam Minhag. He said that there are Minhagim that are under... Yes. Okay, fine. I gave you 2 other sources that are important to think about in Minhag. One is the one that Mati loves so much, is the Chum Sofer. The Chum Sofer, who, if you saw, I forgot I had put this, I put Zed Ma'ot Kitzoni. This is extreme, very extreme. And Kanires Soter Sugya Binadarim. And goes against Gemara. I'm not the first one to notice that it goes against the Gemara, but it is against the Gemara Mefureshet, seemingly at least. Mechilas quote Tarasso. But as Mati correctly pointed out, the Chassam Sofer, possibly in a polemical context, claims that Minhag is more powerful than most things because it is Daraisa from Bal Yachel. He writes, Ki harbe chashacham lach minhaga, yom tov sheni, ki rafu, right, yom tov sheni. It's, what? So the Chum Sofer says that Yom Tov Sheni we're so machmir about, which we are, right? It was one of the touchstones between, like, of the machloket between the Orthodox and the Reform. Yeah, that's like Yom Tov Sheni was like the first thing to go, right up there.
It's like really?
What?
Really?
In the Reform, of course. That was like
pizza.
Why?
What?
The pizza.
Yeah, no, this
that
was before
has,
that.
Like, a traditional value to it.
This went like in the 19th. You know, look, yeah, there are 2 articles that document this extensively. One is by Jacob Katz, and the other is, I think, by Zemels, if I remember correctly. Yaakov Miller sent me an email with these articles when I was in 12th grade, and I read it over Sukkot 1 year. I think I was in 12th grade. Maybe it was in my first year. Maybe I was back. I think I was in 12th grade, though. Good times. Good times. Jacob Katz is the best. So he writes, right... Kiravu, the Kama Gadol Koch HaMinag Hazeh Shom B'Kiddush Yom Tov HaTzeres Hazeh V'chein B'Tfilah. He said the Minag is so powerful, like we daven. It's a Minag. The Gemara calls it a Minag, right? The Yerushalmi calls it Takana. Not important. V'Kikil. I mean, it is important.
Davening isn't Dervan.
No, but I'm saying in davening we say. On Yom Tov Sheni, we treat it as Yom Tov. Right? He says, "V'chikil be'enei rabotino b'aliyatosu lomar Yom Tov ploni hazeh b'sheker v'chazav." He said, "Right, is this a small thing that we refer to Yom Tov Sheni as a holiday, right, which is lie through our teeth?" Right? Lule alim v'chamarach minhagim. If minhagim weren't strong, then what type of sheker is this? The karvli lomar shu iser d'araisa b'neder shehudar b'rabim v'nispashet b'chol Yisrael. Seems to me that minhagim are really d'araisa.
Wow.
So even though originally it was only Darabanan, who knows? Nowadays it's Daraisa.
That's crazy.
Nowadays it's change.
Because now it's a minhag. It's just a minhag, which means it's only a Daraisa. Right? Yes. Yes.
All the races
is. But neither Kabbalah Verachim the Rabbim, but he tells you that it's polemical. Right? Because he says, why did I go to the length to say this? Kivavansenu harabim rabu pritse aminu ka'et. Right? So there's so many pritse aminu, right? These people who are breaching the Torah.
Oh, was he around the time of the moment?
Yes! He has other tshuva where he says, my goal is to make Isurim sound worse than they are to combat reform. He literally says that that's what you should do. So it's not like, when I say it might be polemical, he tells you in other places that he does this, right? So he says, "Hamidu chazon sheker." So chakim al yontav sheni kiminag ba'almahu. Right, they're full of this sheker and they're laughing at it. V'lo avul aloch b'hikvu chachmei Yisrael b'nafshem dibru v'lo yadu v'lo yavinu b'chashecha yishalachu. Right, they don't know what they're doing. They're walking in darkness. Blah blah blah. Right. So it might. I don't know what gives you the idea that this tshuva is polemical. I don't know what would cue you off to that possibility. I'm just saying, theoretically. Yitachin, Yesh Matzav, whatever. A million maybes, okay. Fine. I don't know why people are afraid to say the Chassam Sofer real polemically. He tells you he does, and he's like pretty open about it. It's not like, you know, there's some people who are not clear about it. Like, you know, his Talmidim were not. His Talmidim, Gevalt, right? In the Psak Din of Michalavcha, that was like a disaster and a half. But, what? The Psak Din of Michalavcha, if I'm pronouncing that right, I think 1879, by Rai Lichtenstein and Akiva Schlesinger, who were Talmidim of the Chassam Sofer. They got together a Beis Din of sorts to make takanos against not the Reform, but the Neo-Orthodox, the Modern Orthodox, right, against like Rav Hirsch and people like that. And Maram Shik, who was known for being a Kanoi, read it and said, I don't think I can sign on to this. And he didn't. It's like, if you give the drosha not in Yiddish, you violate Nisadaraisa. And if you wear a short coat, Rachmana Litzlan, you violate Nisadaraisa. What? Yeah, if you move the bima in the front of the shul, Nisadaraisa. It's like, and they put him on Chirim, it's like a very big deal. It was a very interesting document, Psak Din of Michalavcha.
Why they do this?
It's a long story. You want to read all about it? I'll give you an article by Michael Silber.
We do that. It's like just straight up lying.
Yeah, I'm aware. Thank you.
It's not even
I it was amazing to me. I once gave a shiur on this in Toronto, and I didn't exactly put this psak in the best of lights because it's really weird. It's really extreme, and according to the Rambam, it violates Nisar Daraisa of Baltosif, right? Because the Rambam thinks that that's what Baltosif is to pretend that a non-Isar or Dirabanan is Daraisa, right? That's what he says it is. And I said this in one of my first years in Toronto, and like, somebody came over to me, named Lichtenstein, who said, hey, I didn't know anybody knew my great-great-grandfather. My son, Hillel, is named for him. And my other son, Akiva, is named for him because I was related to both of them.
That's insane.
He's a great guy in shul. He's a great guy in the bayit. Like, I was close to him by the end. But, like, I was like, I'm sorry I insulted your great-great-grandfather. Like, Khatasi, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you know? He's like, I didn't know anybody knew them. I'm like, everybody knows who they were. Right? Anyone who knows anything about modern Jewish history knows who they are. Right? They wrote the most infamous psak in the 19th century, period. Right? But Michael Silber has a very, very good article about it. The Psak Din of Michalavcha.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay, one last tshuva here from Reb Chaim Falaji. What? You missed the Chassam Sofer, I'm sorry. I know you love the Chassam Sofer. But you know what it says because you it's your mahus, like your mahus, you live this Chassam Sofer. That Minog is the Oraisa. And Doraisa's, you know, I don't know. Rachman Olzan. Fine. Number 8. Rechaim Falashi is the last source in the sheet. He says, Ein Lishanos Shum Minhog Me'am Minhogim Hakfu'im. Vizos Toras Ha'odam Hasholim. So this is the Torah of the perfected person. Lechos B'maisa Avos V'lo Yata Yaminu Smol. Right, to hold on to what your parents did and not turn left or right. Because what will happen? Each of you is going to rely on your own intelligence, shegetz, right? And do whatever you think is right. And you're not going to care about what came before you. Hayom yisbatol minog echad. Today you're going to get rid of one minhag. L'machar yivatel shtayim. L'machar shtayim. Tomorrow it'll be two minhagim. V'chein l'macharaso. And the day after that too. U'memela kol ha-minhagin yedrun v'tiyah Torah chadasha b'chol Torah v'ador. And then every generation will be a new Torah. B'imashech b'zeh l'fshot gam b'dvarim shenag v'hem Yisr al-pi gadol ador v'shofet asher yebo mehem v'aveira gorerat aveira. But he said it's not going to stop at minhag. Right? And what Rechaim Balaji adds is he's like, look, realistically, you can say it's just a minhag. People who take minhag not seriously, it doesn't stop at minhag. It just doesn't. It doesn't. Like uvda, right? It goes from minhag to derabanan to daraisa very, very quickly. Right? Very, very quickly. It does. Uvda.
That's true. Like strict, like Rambam is like.
There are people. It's not true. The average person who doesn't quite understand the intricacies, right. It's true.
Communities
at large. Say, most people, this is true. Okay, let's try to get through a little bit. What I gave you, the last thing here, is the Marzchiyah. So as I mentioned, the Achronim, probably the Achron who writes most systematically on Psak, is Marzchiyah, is Tzvi Hirschchayas. Specifically, of his books, the most systematic is Darkei Hara. Which its name should give that away. Yes. If you write a book called Darkei HaHora'ah, you had better think systematically about Psak. I don't know. Otherwise, I don't know what you are doing exactly. You know, there aren't really so many books on Psak. They're really on theory of Psak. There are a few. There was one that came out recently by a guy, Rabbi Walters, I want to say, called The Making of a Halachic Decision, and then I think he has a new one, The Making of a Minhag or something. I wasn't the hugest fan. I thought the emphasis were a bit. It's 150 pages or so the book, of which 30 pages were devoted to whether the Mishnah Berurah is Posek Acharon, and one page was devoted to Psikat Halacha B'Sharat Chak, and why that's legitimate. So I thought that it's sort of skewed in a very particular direction, which I wasn't so thrilled about. In the conservative movement, there is a classic book that was put out by Joel Roth, which is a very serious presentation of a very particular view of what conservative halacha is. And then there was a response to that book by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks in his early days. If you follow his writing before, like his chief rabbi days, when he was more of an academic, his writing is much less popular. His older articles are much more, like his modern articles are meant to be like serious, inspirational Torah, right? Like Shavu L'chol Nefesh, like sophisticated, but Shavu L'chol Nefesh Torah. But some of his early stuff is much more like academic. So one of his very early pieces, one of the first, if not the first, I think, Orthodox Forums, is a critique of Joel Roth's philosophy of halacha. It's a bit of a creepy book, Joel Roth. I read it and I felt dirty. Like it's
why?
It is Joel Roth. What? No. So Joel Roth's book. It's a very erudite book. Like, he's very knowledgeable. Erudite. Like, he's very knowledgeable of Torah. He's very, very knowledgeable of Torah. Like, it's a very, very... it clearly shows a tremendous amount of bikias and analysis. It's not like stam. But, like, you think Briskers are formalists? He is, like... The introductory chapter goes as follows. The introductory chapter goes like this. We listen to the Torah because the Torah is the Grundnorm, which is German for the basic law. Or in Hebrew or Yeshivish, it has a chalois halacha. Right? That's basically what Grundnorm means, okay? He says, because we do that, there is no difference. This is what he says. There is no difference between the following three presentations of why we keep halacha. One, we keep halacha because Hashem gave the Torah to Moshe at Sinai, and therefore it is binding. One. Two, we keep the Torah because Hashem gave the Torah, not necessarily through Moshe, at some point, and therefore it is binding. Or three, God didn't give the Torah, but we treat it as binding. He's like, there is no difference between those three, and we shouldn't act as if there is, and therefore, right, defending all the people in the Christian movement who don't believe in Torah Misinai, because it doesn't matter. Because all that matters is that you treat Torah as a chalois. And I'm like, great. I'm pretty sure that is creepy, heretical lumdus. It's like, using like extreme formality to explain why it's not a chisar in your amuna. And then like there's this footnote in the book. Like I have this thing that like I have to, I'm so obsessed with Psak that I literally read what anyone's written on it, including all the footnotes, just to figure out what I don't like about it or I do like about it to try to come up with my own view. So I read through this whole book. And one of the most telling footnotes in the book, he says that there's a tshuva by Ramosha Feinstein that says that conservative rabbis are apostle Eidos. And he says, I don't understand why. Maybe Rabbi Feinstein thinks that not believing Torah Misinai is a psul in being an aid. But if that's what he thinks, he has to establish that point. I'm like, of course that's what Ramosha thinks, and he doesn't need to prove that point. That's obvious. Right? It's obvious that you give up the yesodos of Torah. Like, I don't care if you keep the Torah, you don't believe that it's Misinai. Like, so it's very bizarre. It's like surreal. It's like what happens if you take lumdus and use it to justify heresy? It's
this
like
guy, is from guy.
What?
This guy's a religious guy. Shlomo Kahn
himself. He's like old school JTS. Yeah, he's like old school JTS. Like really old school JTS. Yeah, and it's really interesting. I mean, it is fascinating.
How long is the book?
280 pages, something like that. I don't remember. I borrowed it once from my Ben Nash.
Like the clad to burn, so.
Yeah. That's
what I was wondering. I was wondering how long it takes to burn.
I mean, look, it was it's fascinating, but it really, like, that first chapter just sets me so off. Look, there are a few people within the conservative movement who ad hayom, look, there are different, you know, people, you can't just claim that the conservative movement like is possible for all the same reasons, right? We disagree with them for different reasons, right? Some parts of the conservative movement in Hanami, a lot of the newer ones are not necessarily Talmid Chachamim, right? So it's like, you don't have to engage. But there are less and less, but there were people in the conservative movement who were, you know, who in terms of Torah were very serious. It was, right, the Machloket was about real serious issues. It wasn't just like, we learn Torah and you don't. Right, which again is true of a lot of people, but it's very dangerous to pretend that's true of everyone, because then you have the people in the conservative movement who are, you know, in terms of their knowledge, are serious Talmidei Chachamim, right? And the disagreements are fundamental in terms of ideology, right? And like, some people will be surprised because they'll accidentally run across something by them, right? Like, you know, Adayom, David Galinkin, is like that, right? He's a very, 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 very smart person who knows a tremendous amount of Torah, right? You know, like, some of my friends don't like when I say that, because they're like, it's dangerous to admit that. It's true. Like, you know, it's mamash true, you know. I mean, he complains, B'tzedek, that he doesn't like open orthodoxy, because he says he's been saying a lot of the same positions as open orthodoxy for 30 years, but with more sources and with better halakhic analysis, no one's been listening to him because he calls himself conservative, which is what he is, and now they call themselves orthodox and people think it's more legitimate even though it's less based in sources, right? He gets very angry by this. Like, he's not wrong. His true vote on issues that I don't agree with, right, are still undeniably more worthy of consideration than a lot of other things that are being written. I mean, look, you got to give the guy respect. His one of his first moves as the head of the Vada Poskim, whatever they call it, of the conservative movement in Israel, the Masoreti movement in Israel, was to overturn the driving tshuva. Right? The official party line of conservative Judaism in Israel is that it's also to drive on Shabbos, and that was his doing. Like, that's a big deal. Like, you got to give the man credit. That's not a small thing, right? I remember I once read this. I mean, it was an astonishing tshuva. I came across it by accident by on the Schechter website by, I think, by Monique Nussbaum, I think, who said that she got a question from an Orthodox guy who said that he wrote to her and he said, "I have a shaila for you, which I can't ask my Orthodox rabbi for reasons that will become clear. My wife and I got married and we were like becoming more Orthodox. And we were on the derech and we agreed that we would sort of live an Orthodox life, but we were slowly getting there. But then at some point my wife decided it really wasn't for her. So she complains every Shabbos because she wants to drive and do things with the kids and I don't. And I want to know whether for Shalom Bayis it's mutter to drive on Shabbos. And I obviously can't ask this to my Orthodox rabbi, so I'm asking you." So she writes back and she says, "Look, driving a car on Shabbos includes many Isurei Daraisa and Isurei Darabanan. And therefore, even if it does cause Shalom Bayis problems, too bad. It's an Isurei Daraisa. What do you want from me? It's Usur. And please inform your wife that Shalom Bayis doesn't mean that you have to give in to everything she says, especially when she wants to do what's wrong. Tell her the son of Shalom Bayis means that she has to bend." Right? It's like this very frum Shaila. Like, so he's done a lot to, like, you know. What?
It's good to hear, at least.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you've got to be, you know, so, like, I read this stuff because, like, you know, like, my disagreements with people like that are not, like, I don't think you know what you're talking about. It's I have serious ideological disagreements. And that was what Jonathan Sachs wrote in this early critique of Joel Roth, you know, why he felt the Orthodox position did not buy into this system, right? But it wasn't like, it was saying, look, I understand you have a serious view of what halacha is, and I have serious disagreements with it also, right? And I've mentioned to you before that part of what really pushed me to start thinking seriously about halacha, right? Again, I don't like admitting this all the time, and probably someone will yell at me if they hear this in the recording, right? I don't care. But realistically, I taught for a year at Columbia, right? Like the Columbia Hill once a week, and there were people who would come to my shir once a week, and they learned at Hadar once a week, right? And people would ask me what it was, why it is that I don't agree ideologically with Machon Hadar, which is like the... Yeah, it's like the rejuvenation of old school conservative. It's like the children of old school conservative, right? Like Ethan Tucker is Gordon Tucker's son, right? And Eli Confer, like they were all their fathers were like, no.
All right.
Machon Hadar is the pluralistic halachic egalitarian yeshiva in the Upper West Side, right? Which claims to be halachic but but egalitarian. Okay, that's what it is. And like there were people who would go to their base managers once a night. Like they have a at least when I was in. YU once a week Machon Hadar had an open Beit Midrash night where they would like pay their fellows to bring people in, so like it was very popular, you know, amongst the Chevra in Columbia at the time. So, like they'd go there one night and I give share once a week, so they went to me and like we had very substantive conversations about what it was that I disagreed with. But again, Ethan Tucker has smicha from the Rabbanut HaRashid of Israel.
Really?
Right? Yeah, like he's not like, you know, like he went to Mal Gilboa for a bunch of years and he got smicha from the Rabbanut. Like, he took the same test that any of my Orthodox friends took. It's not like he doesn't know the material, right? Like, so when I would try to come up with a formulation of what it was I didn't like, right, I had to come up with a formulation, not like, what are his sources? He has sources, right? Like his tshuva on why women can carry on for a minion is 90 pages long. Like, there are mekoros.
Those women can carry on for a minion?
Yeah, like that's part of their thing, right? But like, it's 90 pages long, and it's not like made up mekoros. They're real mekorot, right? I disagree with the conclusion strongly, right? But it's not like I could say, oh, he doesn't know mekorot. Like, it's 90 pages long, and it's well written, right?
Where does he make a mistake? Like, is it like his logic is wrong? Or is
that... Again, right? Again. Part of why I started thinking seriously about halacha as a system was because I needed to formulate for myself, right, and not just intuitively, what it was that I disagreed with about his ideology, right? Now, look, it's a danger, because sometimes I articulate it to people and they say that makes sense, I understand your disagreement, and then they would end up at Hadar, right? Like, you know, like, I understand the disagreement, but I find that more compelling, right? That's always a danger, right? But if you don't even have a compelling explanation of what it is you believe, then you're just, like, what are you doing, right? Like, that's closed parentheses. But look, I mean, it's important for you. I think it's probably important for you, if you're going to work with me on this throughout the year, to understand why this is so important to me, right? It's important to me to understand what halacha is, because when you suddenly feel challenged, right, when you realize that there are people who conceive of halacha very differently than you, and not coming from a place of lack of knowledge, but coming from a seriously ideologically different place, it's important to be able to articulate what it is you believe. Right? Now, you may be lucky and you may never encounter this, but you also may encounter this because, like, it exists, right? And your friends may end up there, or you may be invited to come. Like, it's, you know, this is not like Rachok, right? This is something that happens, you know, definitely if you're in New York, or definitely if you're in New York, right? Where are you going to school? You, I know you're all in New York, but not. Where are you going to school?
Queens.
Okay, so you'll encounter this. You will, right? And you know.
I was just gonna hang out in YBT all day.
Yeah.
And you'll be safe.
Right.
Fine.
Cocoon.
As a cocoon. Yes, exactly. Anyways, fine. But for the most part, like I said, how do we get onto that? Because we got into that. Because I said most Orthodox people don't. Right, most people don't think systematically. Again, I've said this before. That doesn't mean I think that they're bad poskim at all. Right, I think good poskim talk about deal with the issues we're talking about implicitly really well. Right, I'm just not that smart. Right, I don't necessarily have that good of an intuition. Right, I need to actually spell out what I'm thinking. I don't have good enough intuitions to just, you know, get it right. There are people who can. Right, they're poskim, like I said, who are not systematic about how they think about Psak, but I trust them because, you know, I think their intuitions are spot on, right? Mine, you know, what?
I assume it's pretty spot on, also.
Well, my intuitions are different, right? I developed my intuitions by articulating what my intuitions were, right? Okay. So, but for that reason, people who really do care about Psak systematically love Zmarskius. Like, Reb Rabinovich loves Zmarskius because he is a systematic thinker like that. He's a very systematic thinker, partially because he's also a mathematician. That helps. We know who Rabinovich is? Okay, Rabinovich is probably the senior rabbi in the Dat Yilumi world, Nachum Rabinovich, or Rabinovitz, right?
Oh.
You know who he is?
I heard of Rabinovitz.
He's the Rosh Yeshiva of Mala Dumin. Right? He's 89 years old, something like that. Tremendous Talmud Chacham. And he's also, I mean, in addition to being a tremendous Talmud Chacham, he has a PhD from U of T. He wrote his dissertation on probabilities in the Talmud and the mathematical theories of the Talmud. It's a very hard book to read. I have it at home. Someone gave it to me as a present because he got his PhD when he was living in Toronto. He was the rabbi at Clapton Park Synagogue, like down a block from my in-laws. So, like, there are people he was their rabbi, and they have his PhD sitting on their wall, like a little book. but it's, I don't know if you're math people, it's not an easy book. I haven't read through all of it, that, just to make that clear. I've tried to open it. You know, that's about as far as I got. At some point, I'll try more when I have time. Okay, so Darkei HaHora. So he writes as follows. We're going to skip around here a bit, but his discussion of minhag is really quite good. And he writes as follows. He says, Nasimata ayin el enyenehem minhagim, masharina minhagim yisr v'heter, shem tzuret lainu al shlosha panim. He said, there are three types of minhagim I want to talk about, which aren't isurim. Okay? Ofen harishon, heim enyanim shel mabekach. I love that expression, by the way. He's like, the first type of minhagim of mabekach. What's mabekach? What's Dvaram Shal Mabekach?
Non-halachic.
Yeah, what does it literally mean?
What is it?
Yeah, it's Dvaram Shal Mabekach. It's a Hebrew expression for, like, you know, whatever. Right? Mabekach. Whatever it is. You know, it is what it is. Right? Ve'einam nogim lo li'siri Torah v'rabbanan gam ken kemo ha'kos haman b'shas kriz megillah. Right? They're like, they're things. They're just, well, we do them. Right? Boo, Haman, boo, right, whatever. V'chein minag machalei chalav b'chag ha'shavuot, right, cheesecake, right, The inyan halicha l'nar b'yom echad shorash shana l'tashlech l'chadome. Tashlech, whatever. The nasan lanu ha-ramah klal gadol b'zeh. The Ramah gave us a nice rule about this. V'zeh l'shano. Ein ra'uy l'l'og o l'vatel shum minag. Don't yell at it. Don't get rid of it. Ki lo l'chinam nikbe'u. Because the Ramah says they weren't created for no reason. U'v'emet reinu k'gam chazal shiris anol k'yotze b'zeh. And Chazal say this as well. Right, these eggs are permitted, but don't eat them because it's al titosh jarzi mecha. Vayinu mishnah sof brachos yizaramam inyan haMishnah shesima v'nemar al tavuz ki zikna imcha bal oreros anu shelo nal igle takanot v'anhagot hakadmonim af al pi sheyesh sheim yishanim. Right, don't make fun of minhagim even if they're old. And he says, and I understood this. I am bepiskei the sifrei mishpat ha'ara ki ledati nesinis tam. And that is the reason. Madu lo yavuz lan zagonuz akadmonim. Why shouldn't you make fun of old minhagim? V'nei kizikinam be'od, because they are old, right? Ki inyanei ha'mavin ha'gadah, right? They've been around for a long time. Have some respect, right? Like that's it. V'afilu inyanim shol mabekach matmidim etzleinu mizman kabir v'lo me'et malhima yaleinu. He said, we have a lot of minhagim that are del dvarim shol mabekach. Right? Judaism is full of dvarim shol mabekach, like herring. I'm not going to explain to the people on the recordings why herring was my example right now. You can ask me later. But he says, look. Yeah. It's herring if you want. He says, well,
sorry for the interruption. If you,
thank you so much.
If you want it, eat it. If not, you will stay for the next shoe.
Tadagaba.
If not, you can eat it.
Tadagaba.
Thank you very much.
He says, "Ulukol apachos misnahagim b'uma elif shanim v'yoser k'mo minag akal me'akos haman b'purim." He said, "These minhagim, you may not like them, but they're 1,000 years old, people, right?" Yeah. Oh God. He said, "Yesh lo midrash smach v'midrashu ba'aruch arach edaga derke Moshe v'ramash ochum rosh hashanah l'semen yesh lamerz b'shas." And he says, "You know what? Even the minhagim." And he says, even the minhagim shel mabekach, right? Even the minhagim that you think have no source, a lot of them do, right? He's like simanim and Rosh Hashanah. The notion of simanim and Rosh Hashanah appears in the Gemara, right? It appears in the Gemara. And he says, and beating the, you know, making noise for Haman, it appears in a midrash. And macholi akum, he said, comes up from kolonimus ben kolonimus, right?
So
macholi chalav in Rosh Hashanah Shavuos. He's a dairy food. Cheesecake comes from Kalanimus ben Kalanimus. No, that's from the Gemara.
Yeah, that's my confusion.
Right? And he says all of these, and all the minhagim we do about mace, they're in Avil Rabasi, etc. Right? Uminag Avoseinu Torah is how he ends that piece. So he said, first category of minhagim he wants to talk about are Dvarim Shel Babakach. And he says, even Dvarim Shel Babakach, they have a source. They've been going back 1,000 years, right? You don't just throw out tradition, right? Right, you don't just throw out tradition. Right, who tells you don't throw out tradition?
Rav Haigon
and Tevye the fiddler, right? Tevye the milkman, right? But Mamish, right? That was how Judaism ran, right? The Varm Shul Mabekach, right? And look, the Rav has a beautiful, beautiful piece about the Tolna Rebbetzin, right? His mechutenister, as they say in Yiddish, right? Mechutenister. Right, because his son Rav Tversky was the Tolna Rebbe, so his mechutin was also the Tolna Rebbe, so his mechutenister was the Tolna Rebbe.
It's true. I lost track of all those words.
The Rav's daughter married the son of the Tolna Rebbe, who then became the Tolna Rebbe.
I understand.
So his son-in-law's mother, the Tolna Rebbetzin, when she passed away, he wrote a eulogy for her, and in it, right. And in it, he talks about the value of Al Titosh Torah Simecha, right? You know what? Let me see if I can pull this up, because it's a beautiful piece. Let me see if I can get this. Let's see if I can get this. Zoom in.
Where?
Okay, I'll try to get it up. Let's see if I can get any reception here, but I'm having trouble with reception.
Do you want to use my phone? Swedish?
Yeah. Go on Wayutara under my name and search Minhag in English, or custom in English. Do customs. Search for customs and see what you get. I put it on a source sheet that I gave at Beth Emmett's a few years ago.
How do I go to people?
What?
How do I go to
people? Go to teachers. Anyways.
Teachers. Genius.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, fine. So, anyway, that's Ofen HaRishon. Okay? We'll come back to why that's important. He says, Ofen HaSheni, Me'osam and Hagim, Asher Monim and Yanim, Me'pnei She'eshvim Chshad, Tzad Sakana. Chash Tzad Sakana. Chash Muvar Be Ma'od. Ulam, Ishmidos are my post, Kimination Enem Nahagim Ayom. Varak, Arab Akhna Zigdola, Varak Prichada, Shagum Agadat, and Komakom, Varim Bashas. He said the second group are the health related ones, which most postkim don't quote, and he says, Ulam Ein Elu Alina Luchova. So those aren't obligatory. Why? And he says, because, And he just goes through because Machaber didn't put them, the Ramah didn't put them, and he goes through all of them, right?
He knows the Mabakach is obligatory.
The first one is somewhat, right? Mabakach. He said the second ones are not, right? They are all the.
I have to be with Haman. Just don't get rid of them.
Right. Right. He gives a whole bunch of examples for this.
Do you want the results, by the way?
Yeah, I'll get in a second. Let's see. Here, yeah. This,
I saw
this
something by Aura on there. She had one thing.
Yeah. She refuses to put more than that on.
Aura
Weinbach? Aura Ziering, my wife. I mean, I know Aura Weinbach also, but not her. Yes. Yeah, okay, so let's see. This piece by.
I was supposed to know his wife's name.
Unfair.
Oh, this is annoying.
I saw
it.
I thought
it was funny. Shrimp sincerely to me.
She doesn't go by Rabbit and Zero. I've had this discussion before.
That's what I
said.
Sadly.
Ugh, what happened? Okay, I don't know. It just disappeared on me when I tried to go back because I was in the wrong one. Okay, if I can find it, I'll find it. okay. So then he says, if you turn to the top of page Tess, right? He says, let's look three lines down. He said, however, Ulam ha'ikar be'elu neishamazu osa mitpashim ba'uma v'chalshu shebitol inyanim elu yigrom machlokes atzumos uperet ha'deos. He said, one thing to keep in mind about these types of minhagim are that even if they aren't obligatory, it's really not worth getting rid of them because it causes machlokes.
Huh?
What, all these types. So he says, Yeshiro Osam. Velo Mochen, Velo Morin, Rak Manichem Osam Bikismam. He said, we just leave them alone. Right? These says Minhagim. We just leave them. Vahad is Kiru Minhagim Elo Besifre. I mean, Yeshiro Osam Bechuv and Levilti Mahar Adam Maharos. He said, and when they mention them, they say, don't get rid of them. Quickly. Ki Hemi Vinu, Achres Dabar Mereshiso, Vyadu Binisayon. He said, because they knew something very profound, right, from experience, which is, he akol inyanet his kadshus mevi la risa seder hakilot. New, right? As the Chasam Sofer says, right? Chalish asam natera. Right? Anything new causes unrest, right? Causes unrest. It just does, right? And he says, ushmias kol tzochav kol karperin vaklal ba'ilu mutav shishogim alim mazidin v'nichom shesnag v'kmo shantago adko. The rule is leave it alone. Let them do what they did. So if it dies out, so let it die out. Right? I've said this before from Memorae, but this is where it comes from. Right, sorry. In the middle, what I skipped is he says some of these minhagim even have a shemetz of darkei amori. So you might say, oh, get rid of them. So that even the ones that have maybe some shemetz of darkei amori, right, these health-related ones, and some of them are more like weird mystical things from like, you know, whatever. So you can't just get rid of them. Because when you get rid of minhagim, people don't understand that minhagim is different from delrais. It weakens their amunah. It weakens their commitment. So he says, so let it die by itself.
Let's say theoretically you set up a community that didn't do minhagim.
So maybe it would happen, but good luck. And good luck.
Also in the general world.
Good luck. Good luck. You know? He's a v'lohaya rak bizman kodem. V'kevan sha'am einam osim ata. They think they're doing a mitzvah. Right? People who are keeping minhagim really view themselves as doing a mitzvah. They do. Right? So he says you can't just get rid of them. You have to, even things that are meaningless, even things which might even have some level of negativity to them, right? You can't just chuck them. It doesn't work that way. The yafe asur rabbasinu sheshiru dvarim elu v'lomiru laharos. And therefore, it was a good thing that that they didn't get rid of them. Okay. So first one are like meaningless ones. Second ones are like health related ones that even have a bit of weird, you know, maybe even problematic sources to them. But still, he says. Right. What I like about Tzchiyus is, first of all, he's systematic, but also he's a very pragmatic posig. Right? He's telling you, look, I you got to understand people. Right? Psak is partially about understanding people. Okay. Well, that's fun. That was a fun quote. Okay, in this source sheet that I have on Minhagim, I noted that this wasn't only like Chazal who were obsessed with Minhagim, right? This was like a very old belief, even of non-classic rabbinic Jews, because I had this quote from Philo, who did the same thing. So I don't know if I should read it for you. Whatever, it's not worth it. Sure. Thou shalt not move thy neighbor's landmarks, which the former men have set up. And this injunction is given, as it seems, not only with respect to inheritance and the boundaries of lands, right? Lotasik vul re'echa, right? Pasuk. But also as a guard to ancient customs. For customs are unwritten laws, being the doctrines of men of old, not engraved on pillars or written on paper which may be eaten by moths, but impressed in the soul of those living under the same constitution. For the children ought to inherit from their father, from the father of their being, the national customs in which they have been brought up, and which they have lived from their cradle, and not to despise them merely because they are handed down without being written. For the man who obeys the written laws is not justly entitled to any praise, inasmuch as he is influenced by compulsion and the fear of punishment. But he who abides by the unwritten laws is worthy of praise, as exhibiting a spontaneous and unconstrained virtue. Right? So this is like an ancient Jewish view of Minhag. But the the quote I wanted to read for you from the Rav. Okay, this is from the Rav. This is from the Rav, and I think it does capture the emotional power of Minhag quite well. And he writes as this, like this. He said, "What is Toras Imecha? What kind of a Torah does the mother pass on?" He says, "Permit me to draw upon my own experiences. I used to watch her arranging the house in honor of a holiday. I used to see her recite prayers. I used to watch her recite the Sidra every Friday night. And I still remember the nostalgic tune. I learned from her very much." Most he's talking about his mother. He's using his mother to then explain about the talk about the Talmud Rebbetzin. The Rav. "Most of all, I learned that Judaism expresses itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me that there is a flavor, a scent, and a warmth to mitzvot. I learned from her the most important thing in my life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of his hand resting upon my frail shoulders. Without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive." Which I know for some of you sounds very appealing, but for the Rav didn't. The laws of Shabbat, for instance, were passed on to me by my father. They are part of Musar Avicha. The Shabbat as a living entity, as a queen, was revealed to me by my mother. It is part of Torah Imecha. The fathers knew much about the Shabbat. The mothers lived the Shabbat, experienced her presence, and perceived her beauty and splendor. The fathers taught generations how to observe the Shabbat. Mothers taught generations how to greet the Shabbat and how to enjoy her 24-hour presence. Right? And the Rav, I think, captures very much what Rav Chis is saying. Like, minhagim are powerful because part of what keeps us committed is the flavor of Judaism. It's not just the laws, as much as we might want to think it is. It isn't. Right? And therefore, the Darkei Aras says, first of all, don't yell at Dram Shel Mabekach. And even minhagim, which might be a little problematic, you might want to get rid of, so let them die out by themselves. But whenever you make an active battle against minhag, you are befoal weakening people's commitment. That is just the reality of how people experience Judaism. Right? And it's folly for us to be over intellectual, right, and pretend that everybody, when we tell them, oh, it's only a minhag that your grandmother did, right, what you should do is what's written here in this book, that that's going to give them an experience of Judaism. Lo kachaze, right? It wasn't that way in the time of Philo, right? Right? You know, and it's not that time in the, it's not that way for the Rav, right? And the Rav doesn't have to prove to you his brisker credentials, right? Right? Literally, doesn't need to prove it, right? It's in the name, right? It's in the name. like literally, right? I don't have to guess, right? You know, it's like, you know, Mayor Soloveitchik jokes that he went, when he spoke at the Republican National Convention, he introduced himself to somebody, the wife of the mayor of someone, some town in Florida, and or governor or something, and he asked his name, and he said Mayor Soloveitchik, and the wife just didn't understand it, and called over her husband and said, you know, honey, I want you to meet, where'd you say you're the mayor of? And he said that was the only time in my life that my first name got me more respect than my last name. He's like, right? Like, if you have the last name Soloveitchik, you just don't need to defend your credentials. You know, it just
mayor
just, you know, the mayor of Brisk of, you know, anyways.
He's not talking about anything that goes against Halacha yet.
No.
He can't really hold segment during Shastar more.
He says, like, you know, kachas, shemetz.
Top of dark
hair. Yeah, tesha, yeah.
But not anything that goes into, like, I guess, a fundamental.
Yeah, no chanami. And then he says, ofen ashlishi, he says, the third category are all the minhage beit hakneset. Okay? That's the third type of minhage he wants to talk about, all of those stuff. Piyutim, yotzros, right? All that stuff. And he says, look, I mean, towards the end of this paragraph, he says, look, piyutim have nothing to do with it. Einam inyan atfila klal. He named milei mi midrashot v'agadar she'en lehem yachas l'nyan shel yom. He said, I get it. I understand that the yotzer piyutim, they have nothing to do with anything. Some of them at least have something to do with the day. Some of them are just random midrashim thrown that have no conceptual link to the day. He's like, I get it. Right? I really do. Right? He says, v'chein... he said, then there's all these, right, then he said, there's all these, right, these minhagim, these, like, minhagim of, like, selling matzos on Shabbos, which is against din, right, all these things we do in shul, like, davening and other things, and he says, everyone divides about them, he said, there's all types of minhagim we do in shul, davening, not davening, some of them are anti-halachic, he's like, it's true, whatever, he says, if you look at the last paragraph here, he says, "V'habeinu re'ei, ki b'nasinu v'ro mechazot polin v'rusin isbatlo amiras hayotzos v'apiyutim." He said, admittedly, in most of our towns, we've gotten rid of yotzos and piyutim. Now, by the way, a lot of the Rishonim didn't like them, but as one of my teachers likes pointing out, the Ibn Ezra didn't like piyutim because he liked tefillah, and he didn't think piyutim were up to par. Most people nowadays don't like piyutim, don't like tefillah. That's why they don't like piyutim. Those are two very different philosophical stances. Okay? But he says, he said, getting rid of this didn't cause any problem. Right? And he says, again, the reason is because they didn't end because people fought them. They just died. Right? They just stopped. Right? I will be honest, I don't know how he divided these exactly. Whatever. But his basic point here is that there's all these minhagim, right? He says, "V'lo nasvim nasol zal b'prishum." We didn't publicize that we were getting rid of the minhag. V'lo nasvim nasenu kibutzim miyuchdei skul al zeh. We didn't make meetings in our communities about it. The vad to get rid of piyutim, right? V'lo nichlo was a sidre beit haknesset. We didn't write up rules. Ki adanu me'az ki kol minhag me'elo sher einam lefias man ma'makom einam miskaimim. And he said, "Here's my yisod: minhagim that are wrong and are time dependent will just disappear when the time isn't right anymore. They just will. It'll just happen." He said, "It's just reality." He said, "Minhagim like that," he said, "you get all worked up about it, they're not going to be able to withstand the flow of time. They're just not." He said, "We do what the Gemara says. Don't protest and don't pasken. Let it be. Just let it be. Shenamod merachok, stand from afar. V'lo nomer v'zeh lo iser v'lo heter, say nothing. It's not usher, not much to say nothing. Rak kol achad inahek moshe she libo chafetz. Let everyone do whatever their heart desires. V'chein no gitzleinu shebe zubadei v'lo omer piyutim." He says, in some shuls they still say piyutim. V'rubam ein omer mosam. And most of them have stopped. They don't say it anymore. Ulam haskama v'kibu v'tveresum v'zeh matzik m'tadim shonim. But if you make a big deal, it's a really big problem. That's a big problem. Masher shamona am asher or Torah Elokim lo nagalehem. He said the majority of people who the light of Torah has not touched them, right? He said the ein yodim lavchin ben minhag al pi din Torah v'chein minhakal. They don't know the difference between minhagim Torah. Udaitem ham maharer acher minhag sheyisrael filu minhag shtus kiu maharer acher ashchina. So the average person who, when you question a minhag shel mabekach, you say that you shouldn't yell during Haman, they think you're questioning the Shechina, right? Right. He's also a bit of a cynical writer. He's not like closed to this. He knows exactly who he's talking about, right? When they see rabbis getting up and making a big fuss, right, right? It's the old line the Rav's wife once said to the smicha guys who were washing dishes, right? Don't trafe up my kitchen with your yoredeya, right? You know, there is a feeling like that, right? Just don't do it. You challenge their minhag. You make a big deal, you destroy their Judaism. Period, end of story. They lose faith in you. I've seen this, right? When I was teaching at Beth Emeth, I was giving a course on customs. Beth Emeth is a conservative shul in Toronto that we had a good relationship with. I was giving a pre-Pesach course that I'm in Hagim. A lot of what we're actually talking about here, just, you know, like a little bit less in depth. But like the basics of it I gave there. You should have seen, it was the year that the official psak of JTS, or the Vada Poskim, whatever they call it, the Committee of Jewish Law, said that kitniot was mutter. And you should see, these like 60, 70-year-old women at Beth Emeth were so angry. Who are these rabbis to tell me that kitniot is mutter? My grandmother didn't have kitniot on Pesach. Who do they think they are? What is this? We only have COR on Pesach. Like, right? They're not. They tell me the chachamim. They're wonderful, traditional Jews. And for them, for the Committee on Jewish Law to come out and say you can eat kidney and you got Pesach doesn't look like your grandparents was an avla, and not all of them are Shomer Shabbos, right, and not all of them are Shomer Taras Mishpacha, right, but kidney, Rachmana Litzlan, because like it or not, that's how a lot of Jews experience Judaism, right, like it or not. And he says, "V'gam heim anesunim tachas mikras man v'toldosav. Gam heim anesunim b'yad chachamim lesnaik b'hem k'tov b'inihim. Ready to el shekol ikar magmatz chalzav mash asr apirson beze hetirim u'mnei shal yivo am lezozo mitzvah." He says, look, realistically, those people ask rabbis questions. They do. But if you start making a big deal about why you don't like minhagim, you're going to lose them. Right? If you be quiet about the minhagim, which are shalma bechach, that have no value, they'll respect you, and you might get them to actually listen to halacha. You start fighting the things that make up their Judaism, and you lose them. He said, that's why Chazal say many times, right, don't be mezalzel in things. Right? Don't be mezalzel in hagim. He said, ulam, in this bottom, it's not atzmam, ain't achron varvoin. He said, if they get, die out, the minhagim die out, fine, we don't have to revive them, that's not our job. Lachzikim becheskaz, I don't have to support these minhagim that are meaningless. Yisharu b'sefer chukah, let them stay in the book, right? I don't have to leave them the book. V'am yasu em ketov b'nehem, let everyone do what they want. They want to get rid of it themselves, gizun dehet. So it's like people saying Hallel on Pesach night. So it's a Sephardi minhag. Okay, and the Ashkenazim say it. Okay, who cares? He says, what are you making big deals? Right, this is what drives people away from Judaism. It does. Right? If the rabbi gets up and gives a whole spiel in shul about how this minhag that everybody loves is not halacha and is problematic, right? They're not going to listen to you when you get up and say that there's such a thing called Borer on Shabbos. Right? They're just not. Because Borer isn't real to them. But screaming at someone's name is. Right? It's just the reality. Right? So therefore, he says in Perek Shvi, I'm just going to skim through and we'll finish in just a minute. He said, this would be true even if there was a Beis Din, right? In Perek Shvi'i of this, he says, that which I said, that Varm Shel Mabekach, even if there was a Beis Din, I wouldn't get rid of them. He's saying, this is not an authority question. It's not like I don't have the authority to get rid of Minhag. He said, even if I had the authority, I had a centralized Beis Din, right? I wouldn't be stupid enough to challenge Minhagim for no reason. He said, it's just not how you do things. He said, now, of course, there's a difference between halacha and halacha and minhag. And then he says, "Da kiachinu b'nisrael mitzuyonim hayom bin amim al shnei panim shonim al mitzad echad shu mitzad shu balei dat miuchad v'adim yisher shem v'nam yisher balei dat v'onim lohu shem am miuchad b'yamim kadonim b'safa nifrada v'nimusim miuchadim." He said, "I'll take it a step further. Jews in Galut are different for two reasons." They have different beliefs as a religious system, and they have different practices and language and hopes, right? They hope for the Beis HaMikdash, right? Right? We hope for the Beis HaMikdash. We hope that Israel will return to its land in Eretz Yisrael, or Hashem. Right? We hope for the time of Mashiach, etc., etc. He says, right, we're different in so many ways, right? From the other nations. He said, we're halachically different and we have cultural differences, right? Jewish cultural differences. And he says, look, we hold on to the Torah because we're part of a different religion. Let me just skip through this here. And he said, but all these things, right, the mitzvos, the rabbanan, minhagim, right, they are outside symbols which are me'orer, our souls to God. Right, like that's what it is, right? They, you know, they keep us connected to God. That's what we do. Fine. And then he says, "V'chol es shanu roim zelos nemshach." We can sing about Yedam Atamar. I said, "Azay tov v'nachol." Example: "Lam roim v'nachol mizvan she'az manim shalom v'ashom ben hagim alo b'uma v'him rofuyim eslam." Azay b'tam atzmam achrei shanu roim makiram she'inu mukhsharim v'avazam v'ein mutzlachim b'shlichosam ein lam koch v'oz eskayim ba'am afilu osan nedvan shachu b'uma oz eshav eskil en hog elam nagos v'achar shachu b'ma'am hinei gam b'ze ofen b'tel muvutalim ro rak letzorach kiyum ha'uma. He said, "Min hagim is what keeps us together culturally. It's one of those things that keep us together culturally." And he said, therefore, when they die out, if it doesn't hurt the ummah, so big deal. Right? Meaning he pushes it. He says, part of what makes monogamy important is that cultures have customs. They just do. Right? That's what it is. Right? It's not about halacha. It's not a law. It's about being a culture also. That's what makes us Jewish. Right? We have halacha, but we also have customs that connect us. And therefore, he says, the mitzvos, right, are lahataras hadas, right? They're the right. But the minhagos are what keep us together as a nation. They just are. Realistically, for the average person, that's what keeps them going. Right? It's not the halacha. Right? What keeps us together are shared experiences, our shared religious experiences, shared cultural experiences. Minhag is a lot of that. Right? He says, they're the melech ha-makayim es ha-basar. Right? They're the salt that keeps the meat going. They're not the meat. They're not the ikari. I'm not pretending it isn't. Right? It is. But they are what keep us together. They are what keep people going. Right? Chayin min hagos kedumos bo bepirsim lifal eitz amona am chizuk mitirei amuna v'alma v'achva. They're what keep the nation together, the brotherhood together. Kebein achinu amufuzarim, between a scattered nation around the whole world. V'kol zman sham nogim min hagos ke'ila v'kiblo lehem lehit nahel bepirsim achareyem azay chalil le'ish prati lahakel bohem. So as long as this is what people are doing, you can't make fun of it. You can't be lenient in it. Right? You just can't. Because it's what's mechazig us. And it's right. Mekevan shahavu shorish b'leiv ha'am. They're saying kasha frida min amorgal. They're what's in their hearts. You can't separate people from what they're used to. It just doesn't happen. And it's not easy. He says, right? V'lo nakel lahem lasov inyanim mishanim asher ugulu behem mine az. And that's why Chazal say, right, that you shouldn't fight these minhagim. But then at the end he says, but, and this will make Ariel happy, he says, of course, this is only if something isn't actually usser. Right? He said, meaning at the end of the day, yes, it's important, but it's not the ikar, it's the melach. Right? It's not the ikar, it's the tafel. It's important. But if there's actually a minhag which is negative and hits what's more important, ikar hadas, so obviously you have to fight it. Right? I can tolerate a little bit of negative, a little bit of quasi-weirdness, right? That I can deal with. Right, he says the one, so he says at the end, he said, those which are mamish darke amorech mori, v'reach avod dezara, right? So he says, ein iskar b'shum sefer b'sefer chachmi Yisrael, ragn hukos b'tchilas minashim v'tipshim, right? He said the ones that are, yeah, okay, fine. So he says, even though those have a place, those I would get rid of if I could.
Which ones right? have a place?
What?
Which ones have a place?
They're like, they have a place like Mencius, describing it. Right? Oh. He said, those I would get rid of. He said, sometimes, and he said, it's like smoke. Right? He's like, smoke can also store meat. It can also ruin it. Right? He's like, get rid of that stuff. Yeah.
Why
would
you
base
that one?
What?
Why would you keep selling the
masses? I don't know. Okay, so just to summarize, and you can read it inside, but really we went a bit over time, just a few minutes. But what I think is really, the Darkei Hora, his argument is basically, it's a very powerful one, right? It's a very pragmatic one, but it's a very strong one. Right? His argument basically is, look, for the average person, it doesn't mean anything when you tell them Daraisa, Darabana, and Minhag, right? Someone once pointed out to me, if you read the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, if you're used to reading the Mishnah Berurah and you read the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it's a nightmare. Right? Because the Mishnah Berurah, every line they'll tell you, this is an Ishtar Daraisa, this is an Ishtar Darabana, the Nafkamina Safik Darabana Lahakel, da-da-da-da-da-da. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, like you read it and you don't know whether something is Chiv Skila or a Minak Shal Mabakach. Right? You Mamish don't know. Right? He just lists. There's no background. But it makes sense because the Mishnah Berurah wasn't written for Balabatim. Right? It wasn't. Right? It's written in the best of the tradition of Litta. Right? You know, it's written for people who... The Ber Halacha is not written for Balabatim. It's just not. Right? I mean, educated Balabatim, fine. But I mean the Balabatim of 100 years ago. Right? It's not. Right? The average person, realistically, the way they live Judaism, ad hayom, even with the increase in education, is they do what they do. Right? They do. And sure, things have somewhat changed, right? Chaim Soloveitchik develops this a lot, that we've moved away from strict mimetic tradition to text tradition, so it's a lot less true. Rupture and reconstruction, for sure. It's true, but it's still true that the majority of people, a big part of who they are and why they do what they do, is custom. And therefore, what he adds, and again, the Rav sort of gets to this also, but the Darkei Hora much more thoroughly, is that in a Hanami, there are a lot of minhagim that have no source. Right? Some of them may even have a shemitz of negativity in them. Right? But he said the reason we keep minhagim strong is because it's what gives people the fabric of their life. And then he adds in Perek Shvi, it's what keeps us together culturally, which is part of what keeps people Jewish and keeps people caring. And he said, if you fight Minhagim, you're going to lose the bigger battles. Because they're not going to listen to you about halacha. If that, which realistically is how they experience Judaism, they see you as standing against. Right? They're not going to trust a halachic authority who doesn't take seriously what they think is the most important part of their Jewish life. Right? It's just a reality. And therefore he says, at the end he clarifies this. He said, if something's mamish negative and usur, so obviously you have to get rid of it because it's tafel. Right? In the end of the day, we're a religion before we're a culture. But he said, if it's not negative, and even if it's slightly negative, but it's defensible, or it's not so bad, you can't kill it. Right? You can't fight it, because you're going to lose people. And therefore he says, you want to let it die? So let it die. If it disappears, let it disappear. Big deal. I'm not chasing after Minhagim. I don't need them to survive. But you can't fight them. Right? You can't be a rational purist and say, it's just a Minhag, what do I care, and fight it. Because that may be okay for you, the people who managed to read through the Darag HaRa'ah. Right? It's not true for the average person. Right?
So is this advice, or saying you're
chayiv
not to be
mad? No, he's saying he's chayiv. He's saying that's why Chazal is saying a lot of things. Halacha vein morin kein, right? That's why they say a lot of times that you shouldn't, right? That it's mutter, but asur l'chal lahatir b'fneihem. K'minag avaseim b'yadeihem. Right? Chazal tell you, don't fight minhagim. Right? And he says, even dvarim shel mabekach. That's why the Ramah says, don't be malig on Minhagim, even ones which have no source. Because he said, maybe they do have a little bit of a source, but even if they didn't, it would give people the flavor of Judaism.
He's saying even if it's not a Minhag Makom, like...
Correct! He's saying this with Dvarim Shel Mabekach. Right? And that's really what we've seen today, which we haven't seen before. Right? Is we've talked about Minhag, which is Okar Halacha, and Minhag Vatik, and Minhag Makom. Right? What the Darag HaRa'ah does is it gives you a defense of what most people think of as Minhagim. Right? Minhagim Shel Mabekach. And Minhagim, which are just Minhagim, which are just what people do, that have no halachic status. But he says, in the end of the day, they're very powerful in religious experience. And I would just add, and then we'll finish, is that I think partially that's why Minhag, the halachic Minhagim we've been seeing so far, are so powerful. Right? Because what he says is true about Dvarim Shel Mabekach. Right? Minhagim Shel Mabekach. But it's basically what Rav Haigon said about Kol HaTorah Kula. Right? It is, right? That's what Rav Haigon said about Kol HaTorah Kula, that all of Torah gets its tokeh from the fact that people live it. Right? And with that insight, you have to realize that, right, if that's really where halacha gets its authority, at some level it gets its authority from the fact that it's lived, then that's why at some level minhag has power, even b'makom halacha, maybe even neged halacha, under certain circumstances. So, you can't then wake up, you can't just like turn around and say, look, that's true of Minhagim that have halachic status. But the ones that don't, but people feel like they do, I'm going to throw in the garbage. The same psychological reality that gives real Minhagim their power gives Minhagim Shel Mabekach a sway over people's hearts. Right? And you have to recognize that. Right? And you have to be smart. Right? And that's what I think he adds, is that part of Psak, especially Psak revolving Minhagim, has to be pragmatic and has to incorporate not just texts, but the recognition of emotionally and psychologically how people experience Torah. Yeah?
I heard there's an idea of not being a flea of the realm.
Exactly.
Similar to
correct.
You don't do anything that's right.
Correct. Judah Goldberg likes pointing out, Rabbi Dr. Judah Goldberg, that the Gemara has this notion in Avodah Zarah based in Sharia. Right? That you're not supposed to be a Bezdin Sharia. Right? What's a Bezdin Sharia? It's a Bezdin that's known for being Mekel. Why? Right? It's talking about somebody who literally thinks that each psak that they made is right. But at some point they warn them, stop paskening Lakula. They're going to call you a Bezdin Sharia. He said, why? What's wrong with being a Bezdin Sharia? You think it's all mutter? And the answer is because at some point you may be doing this with integrity, but if you become known as the person who's always Mekel, you lose your integrity. Right? And part of psak, and I've said this before, part of psak is politics in the highest sense, is you have to be real about where people are and how you're going to convince them to do the right thing. Right? And if you're such a purist that you're going to fight the things that are meaningful to people because you're an uber-rationalist, right, and all you care about is what's halacha, 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 right, you're an uber-source person, you're going to lose people. And to be a good posek is to also be a good pragmatist and be a good psychologist.
Yeah,
Right? And that's what he's telling you. He's telling you part of the reason Agamar Sirius is because, realistically, that's how people experience Judaism.
You'd say that's the difference between Lamedus and Psa.
Avada. That's one of the big differences. Okay, let's...